This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time to tee off with Dirt and Sprague.
The honor of teeing off, if there's a social hierarchy, the most important person goes first.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Here's to the finely tuned athlete on the verge of greatness.
The Fans U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club. There's no better course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
We think we've found your new favorite golfer.
The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in on this, still cloudy, still smoky Wednesday afternoon. Exceptional update there from our guy Jeff Ross.
That is such a good way.
Well-oiled machine. Nate Lowe.
Such a good way to start the show, man.
Nate Lowe!
In the future, if that ever happens to you again, Russ, can I ask you one thing? Can you make up the last name and see if anybody catches it? Like, just throw a random name, like Morrison, and see if anybody texts in and be like, dude, what are you talking about? It's Nate Lowe, man.
I thought that was great. I really did.
Such a good way to start the show.
I think one of my favorite things of radio, no matter how I feel about different hosts, my favorite thing of radio is when people are authentic and they're just honest. And yeah, you can make up a last name. I think that's good. But when you also go, Nate, I lost it. Well, never mind.
What the hell?
It's great. It's
nobody's great. Listening anyways.
Sweet fancy
you can't
Moses.
Say damn on the air. That was awesome,
right,
man.
Hi, guys.
There's something about live air mistakes that are just great. And we screw up so many times, like too many times to count over the course of a three-hour show. It's great when you hear something. That's the beauty of live radio,
maybe it's
man.
It's just good to get it out of the way right off the bat. You know, right?
Get it out of the system at 12:02.
Nowhere to go but up.
I think people would always be surprised. I tell family this once in a while. You actually end up messing up far more when you're recording than you are live. But when you're going live and make a mistake, it's so much easier to have fun with it. Make fun of yourself, make fun of somebody else.
Yeah.
Whereas like you record it, you get really pissed. You're like, come on. I'm reading a script.
Right. Browns are playing tomorrow night. I remember doing that when I started here, and you would like try and cut your teeth on the sports update desk. That's like how you first can get on the air. And I remember.
Speak for yourself.
Well, we're not all Beaver insiders here, okay? We don't just jump right into on-air opportunities.
True.
Some of us got to grind up the ladder the old school way, okay? And I remember cutting updates, though, and I used to record them, and you would always stop when you would screw up and be like, damn it, and like start over until you got one perfect and then go show the boss like, hey, look how good I am. Put me on air. But it's not a realistic way to do it in any way, shape, or form because you can't do that when you're doing an update. My first ever update I did on The Fan, I came in, and I remember I was nervous, like standing there nervous as hell. My hands were shaking. It was because Mike like lost his voice or something, and I had to come in. He ran the board, and I just did the updates for him. And so I was standing there reading my update, and I almost screwed up at the very end, but I powered through, and I came way too close to dropping an F-bomb while the mic was still hot. I came that close to saying it, and Mike, like, happened to click the mic off at that exact right moment, and then I said it, and I was like, oh, my God, that was really close. That would have been a bad way to pop my cherry on the air. So thankfully that didn't happen, but it was very nerve-wracking.
Yes.
At least I've never cursed on the air. Yeah. On wood.
You've never cursed on the air?
No.
Oh, I curse all the time.
Dirt's done it a couple times.
Yeah, I've done it too many times.
You talk a lot more on here than I do.
Yeah. You know what happened. You should drop one in an update and see if anybody notices.
Right? Oh, yeah. That'd be when the boss
Clippers,
is listening.
What the F was that?
Well,
you guys were awful last
night.
By
the way, God bless the Denver Nuggets. I mean, look, we played them last year, right? Portland played Denver last year. Great seven-game series. I still don't know how they beat Denver because Nikola Jokic had nobody to defend him. But here we are, right? Dame's awesome.
Here we are.
CJ was great. I said this in the text string to you and Swigart, and I hate to really admit this. I'm just being truthful here. I've been okay during COVID, right? Like, my family's been good. My house is still standing. Things have been okay. It's not picture perfect, but things have been okay. Last night was one of the more enjoyable nights of my 2020. I hate to admit this publicly, but watching that team lose.
Wasn't it great?
And I guess I never really cared about the Clippers, but knowing a Clipper fan, adding with the narrative of the radio host before us deeming Kawhi a top five player of all time already, it just all kind of added up to the point where watching them get blown out in the fourth quarter and all be scared to take or make a shot, it was picture perfect for me. It was everything I needed in my sports life, and I didn't even know I needed it a month ago, but here we are.
I needed it desperately. It felt awesome. I was laughing my ass off on the couch. The wife was sitting next to me basically looking at me throughout the game asking, why are you laughing? It's like Denver was pulling away.
Lynn was doing the exact same thing.
What is so funny about this? And I'm like, you don't understand, man. They made fun of Dame, and they laughed at him, and now they're getting eliminated in the second round. Like, that was like the ultimate poetic justice, was it not?
Yeah.
The way that they had a sense of arrogance about them without, like, Kawhi obviously has accomplished great things in his career. I'm not going to take that away from him. But they, as a collective group, acted like they were the NBA champions before anything had actually been played. And they just kind of coasted all year thinking we're on paper going to win this thing and nobody can compete with us. And everybody handed them the trophy all year.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody can beat the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Nobody can beat the Clippers. And for me, it was in that game in the restart bubble when they mocked and laughed at Dame for missing a free throw in a game that didn't really mean much. It hurt Portland. They ended up making the playoffs anyways, but that was a costly game for Portland. And then the comments that they had after the game, basically saying you're going to be 1-2-3 Cancun, you're going home early this year.
The Instagram post.
We're going to send you home. Like, all that kind of stuff, again, acting like they were going to win the NBA Finals before the playoffs even began. It was incredible poetic justice. And the only other night that I can remember that matched that in terms of NBA Twitter, all collectively feeling the same way, was Game 7 of the 2016 Finals.
Yes.
I think people hate LeBron, but there was such an animosity buildup for Golden State and just kind of the arrogance that they had. And they had just won the Finals and Draymond and all that stuff. I think there was a huge sense of relief of laughing at Golden State for losing that game, and the same thing happened last night.
Yes, Andrew, you are correct. In everything you just said, you hit it right on dead center. There you go.
Felt good, man. Felt good.
It really did. Did you end up betting them?
I did. I had my best night gambling in a long time.
I got to tell you, I had a bad football weekend. I just, full disclosure, I had two bets, both of them lost. Wasn't great. I had a great NBA night because I just said, you know what? You got a few bucks here in the account. I took Miami plus the 2.
You take your chances, baby.
And I took Denver plus the 7.
Let's go. I took them on the money line.
That was plus, what, 260? Or did you?
Yeah, it was plus 260, 275, somewhere in that range.
That's nice.
That was a nice little case. And I live bet Miami when they were down 8. I put some money on them on the money line. And then I hit on the Islanders to beat Tampa, too. It was a great night last night.
There is something about arrogance where I think you can appreciate it when you can back it up. But then in the same way, you laugh at it when it doesn't come close to being true.
Yeah.
Like Pat Beverly, he had a line, I think it was this year.
It was to Steph Curry.
To Steph Curry, regular season before Steph hurt his hand, where he basically got into an altercation with Steph and said, your run of 5 years is over. I own the next 5 years here in the NBA. And I think Steph had a funny response of, aren't you 31?
Yeah, what are you going to dominate until you're 36 here, buddy?
You're not going to be on this team in 2 years. You'll be too old.
Your league? You're Patrick Beverly.
And I don't think it's summed up better than what you referenced when they're laughing at Damian Lillard. By the way, you're laughing at Dame?
Yeah.
Like, okay, Dame hasn't won a title. Dame hasn't been to a finals. He's been first team all NBA. He's been third in MVP voting. He's made this franchise relevant in the title conversation. Even if you don't think they'll win it, he at least, you bring him up because of him, and you're going to laugh at him because he missed 2 free throws.
Right.
in a regular season? Was that a regular season
game? That was the regular bubble. That was like game four of the bubble for them.
It's even dumber.
And then the next night he scored 61 points.
So all the the cockiness of them, and you mentioned 2016. I don't even think it was as much about Steph or Clay or Kerr. It was really Draymond.
It was mainly Draymond.
Pat Beverly and Draymond are the two cocky bros who play on a better team.
Right.
And they're not the ones that carry it, but they think they are.
Yeah, look at Draymond this year. He's a perfect example of that. Didn't hear much from Draymond out of Golden State when they had the worst record in the NBA.
No, and
then he'll be back to running his mouth next year.
He packed it in with his injury because he was tired of losing by 30 every night.
He started working for TNT and CNN.
And there's something about watching Jokic and Murray dice them up, and I just... It was great. I know we have a lot
awesome,
to get to
man.
Today, but that... was spectacular.
Well, and I think my main thing, and we'll have a lot on this. It was just, some people are going to be bummed and the ratings won't be great that you don't get a chance to watch Lakers or Clippers. And I'm already gearing up for
I don't care about that.
See, and I don't either. I'm already gearing up for the column. See, the NBA is dead. But if you had Lakers and Clippers, they'd be through the roof. There's no doubt about it because of the faces of those franchises. I love the fact that right now, kind of the two stories of the bubble have been teams that I, at least personally, didn't see coming. Now, maybe some thought Miami would go on this run. I didn't see it coming. I think they're a bit of a dark horse, and now they're up in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
And you got Denver knocking off the Clippers with a chance to go. Like, what if you get a Denver-Miami NBA Finals? I think that'd be awesome.
This was the one thing. Like, I'm wrong about 90% of what I say. I did not like that matchup for the Clippers. I thought it did... It made it very difficult because of Jokic. They don't have a big, and Zubats is only going to do so much. And to your point about Miami, go show me the national pundit that picked Miami and Denver in their conference finals.
Nobody.
You could have liked Miami. Nobody picked them.
No.
Right? So this is kind of what the bubble does. You know what the bubble does better than any other season we'll ever have, probably? They'll get back to going on the road and playing in other arenas with or without fans. We don't know yet. The bubble... It shows you who truly, it's just basketball.
Just, but no home court advantage.
No home court, your own bed, travel, rest days. All of that has been eliminated with the bubble. It is lace them up and go play.
Yep.
And this is kind of what you get. You get a Miami that plays great team basketball. They're tough. They don't back down. They're not afraid of the moment. And you get Denver down 3-1. Everybody, including myself, wrote them off, said this series is over.
We're done, man.
And they win three straight against a team most thought would win the championship because they play great team basketball, they believe in their coach, and they don't let distractions bother them. Michael Porter Jr.'s comments could have totally derailed them, and instead it almost brought them together in a weird sense. So that's what I've loved about the COVID bubble basketball. It's pure basketball playing and there's nothing else around it. Home court's irrelevant, fans are irrelevant, everything. And you're just getting guys on an open run and you see what happens. And this is kind of what you get. You get a Denver, you get a Miami in the conference finals.
I love it, man. I'm here for it.
All right. We got a busy, busy show. We'll get back into the Clipper Nugget game at 12:30 for the ticker. Our former colleague, Alex Crawford, who is the only Clipper fan maybe in existence, he's pretty confident about what his team would be this year. And you highlighted that with some tweets last night.
At Theodore Johnson, go check out the old takes exposed of Alex Crawford.
And I hope old takes picked it up and retweeted it. It was fantastic by you to do that. He's going to join us on the Daily Ticker. And then Michael Spencer will also join us for the Daily Ticker. He is in Denver and we'll get his thoughts on the Nuggets making a conference finals appearance. Their first one since 2009. What does he think about the matchup against the Lakers? Stuart Mandel, national college football writer, is going to join us at 1:00. So we'll dive into this college football story. What we're going to do is start with college football, then go back to the NBA, and then go back to college football.
Look at that.
Those are the two big topics today.
Bingo, bingo, bungo.
So it also should be noted, Damian Lillard was just announced all NBA second team.
Yep.
So congratulations. Dame has been third, first, and second team in his NBA career. Just continues to be stellar. All right, so let's start with college football. The big news today is that the Big Ten is coming back. They did vote. They all agreed. What does this mean for the Pac-12? We'll start in the Big Ten. Dirt and Sprague, happy to be with you on 1080 The Fan.
Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
One of our P1s, Brennan, makes a good point. Nobody has called the other a bitch yet, so.
Yeah, would you quit being such a bitch over there? Do the show! Stop being a bitch! We're going to play that audio today. It is, it's radio gold.
Well, there's people not on Twitter, so they have no idea what we're referencing. Trust me when I say a radio show in Houston.
Stay tuned for that one.
Good Lord. Good news in college football. The Big Ten, remember, we talked about them inking a deal for that rapid testing that the Pac-12 had agreed upon.
Mm-hmm.
They did do a vote, and they have they have voted to reinstate. They are going to do fall football season, and they're bringing it back. They're
bringing it back, baby.
They're going to be on the timeline just enough for them to be in the college football playoff conversation. I would bet -250 are the odds. Ohio State's schedule is pretty cake. Because
without a doubt,
you got to get a team in, right? If you're coming back, you got to do what you can to get a team in.
Oh, and hell, if the SEC is going to do it for their cross divisional games, you might as well play their same game.
They are going to return October 23rd for 9 straight weekends.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to just play an interconference schedule, and then they're going to do an end of the season 9th game where the collective seeds in each division play each other. So the worst team in the Big Ten is going to play the other worst team in the Big Ten all the way on up to the top. But this was pretty big news. The Big Ten is the next conference to join in on a slightly later fall start.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be in this playoff conversation with the SEC, Big 12, and ACC. First, with the Big Ten, your thoughts?
Not surprised. I mean, we had Heather Dinich on yesterday. It's all the momentum has been building in this direction. I would be curious to ask some of the presidents who are very adamant about not playing, including the Rutgers president, who we've talked about, who had a pretty bold statement last week about how he's not going to let it happen. And now they're playing. Like, what has changed in the last 4 or 5 days? Because this testing agreement has been in place now for a few weeks, at least, for the Big Ten. So that would be my curious question. Also, what was the vote total? Was it a unanimous vote, or did they just get to the 9 threshold that was necessary in order to return? But from everything we've heard in reporting, Heather Dinich told us yesterday, this was going to happen. I think the end of October made sense more so than early October. You need to get the testing in place, which I think they said will be in place by October 1st. And then you want to give teams 3 or so weeks to try and get ready, get their fall camps going. And then you're hoping to be able to play. I do think you're playing a bit with fire here because of the fact that you have an 8-week stretch before the playoffs are set to begin. So unlike the SEC and the ACC, who are starting earlier, obviously, the ACC beginning and the Big 12, for that matter, the SEC starting the 26th, they have the ability, if they are to miss games, to make up, you know, hey, we'll try and schedule this one later. Now, if it becomes a snowballing effect, they won't be able to do that. But the Big 10 has 8 weeks to play. And so if you get a team that cannot play for 1 week or 2 weeks, there's no making up those games by the time the committee decides who's going to the college football playoffs. So if Ohio State has an outbreak in their locker room, sorry, Ohio State, you're done. So that needs to be pointed out. I also, and it's getting lost today, I love what they're doing at the end of the season, and I hope that's something that all conferences do going forward. Giving one last game, especially for those who aren't going to a bowl game, against a conference opponent, a chance to wrap up your season on the same weekend of the conference championships, I love that idea.
Who's going to play Rutgers?
Who's going to be in last place?
We know Rutgers is going to be in that game. Northwestern's director of sports medicine, I don't want to butcher his name, but he had this quote. He says that the antigen testing that they just got and that partnership, by the way, this is what the Pac-12 is also in partnership with.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's so good that it can, quote, detect a level of virus thought to be below the level of infectivity, end quote. So the positive cases will be identified and isolated before a player is contagious.
That's huge news.
It was monster news. And we knew the testing was the big part of this, that yes, they wanted to play football in the Big Ten. This isn't a political stunt. This was about doing what they can to protect student-athletes. So however you feel about it, they were able to get adequate testing. And by the way, it's not just for football players. They announced this is for all fall sport athletes.
Mm-hmm.
They'll all be available. And this is the game changer. And you look at the Big Ten now and waiting for this, I commend them. I really do. Whether you think college football should come back or not, I mean, that's a different conversation. But here we are. They feel it's safe enough for the student athletes to be able to go play a season,
mm-hmm.
have enough medical treatment, testing, et cetera, to do it safely. I commend them. The SEC, the Big 12, the ACC, I hope all those conferences can get through without any major COVID situation. The Big 10 did this the right way. Yes, they had a flub with the conference schedule announcement and then like a week later announcing that they were postponing football.
but I commend them because they waited for the proper testing to be adequate, to have enough of it, and now they're at a point where they're going to be able to do it safely. They're coming back, and they're doing it the right way, at least.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think to have accurate, rapid testing on a daily basis was always the way that this should be handled. And I would argue that the other conferences should have been mandated by the NCAA to have that in place before they started playing.
Well, the NCAA is cowards.
Right? Yeah, they're not doing anything. And you've had issues pop up, and you've had a lot of teams that have had to cancel games, and I'm not quite sure why that isn't a bigger headline. The whole point of this is it should be able to, you should be able to avoid that with this level of testing. If you could detect it that early on and not allow it to spread throughout a locker room, and you're doing it on a daily basis so you don't have guys coming to practice or being around the team when they're contagious with the virus and they just don't know it, it should eliminate that from knocking out an entire roster. Does it mean everybody's going to stay virus-free? Absolutely not. Guys will test positive, but you want to keep it to a point where it doesn't spread to, you know, 20, 30, 40 guys. It should be noted as well that if you test positive, I believe they're making you sit out for 21 days. So again, highlighting the if it does spread in a locker room, a team might not be able to finish a complete eight-game season. This was the first step, and now I think all of our eyes are going to turn to the Pac-12 and see what their response is going to be to this. And I know a lot of noise is being made on Twitter. I would caution everybody just to take a deep breath. There are still pretty major issues going on in Washington, Oregon, and California. Look out your window if you don't know what I'm talking about. And I think once those subside, I don't really see a reason why the Pac-12, with their testing in place, can't follow a pretty similar blueprint of what the Big Ten laid out today.
Yeah, Larry Scott did put out a message. I want to make sure I'm reading this. Oh, shoot. That's the wrong one. He sent out a message today, and I'll at least say this. His statement said, okay, here it is. I'm sorry. I clicked the wrong link. At this time, this is from Larry Scott. At this time, our universities in California and Oregon do not have approval from state or local public health officials to start contact practice. We are hopeful that our new daily testing capability can help satisfy public health official approvals in California and Oregon to begin contact practice and competition. We are equally closely monitoring the devastating fires and air quality in our region at this time. Yep. We are eager for our student athletes to have the opportunity to play this season as soon as it can be done safely and in accordance with public health authority approvals. I will sum this up for you and translate it. It's on Oregon and California.
Yep.
If you want Pac-12 football to come back, stop pointing the finger at Larry Scott. He made it abundantly clear today. If you get health officials to sign off with this new rapid testing, if the air quality can improve from plus 300, I looked at Eugene today. It was like 360 when I looked at it.
Yeah.
If those two things can go in line, I think the Pac-12 is also coming back. And I'll give you one more. I think there's a possible timeline here, depending on the communication between presidents, chancellors, and the governors of Oregon and California. I'm not going to put it out of their own possibility by Monday. This takes a huge turn.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either.
If you can do that, it's conceivable you start, assuming the smoke goes away, start practice Tuesday to midweek next week. You give your teams 4 to 5 weeks for training camp, which is basically what you get for fall camp anyway. And you could start this thing like late October, the 24th or the 31st, and 8 straight weeks would take you right up to that college football playoff ranking. And if the Pac-12 gets on the horn with the committee, you could say, hey, if you bump that committee ranking of the playoff by 1 week, we can also be a part of this. This is not inconceivable to me, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's the wheels started turning on this.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. You're going to need the government approval from Kate Brown and from Gavin Newsom in Oregon and California. I am, no matter your political leanings, I think we all need to acknowledge that they are dealing with a pretty looming elephant in the room right now with these fires, and that is their first priority, more so than college football. But I do believe eventually you're going to sit down in front of them. They'll get to see the daily testing and the accuracy of it, the rapidness of it, and I think that will allow them to give the thumbs up for them to start practicing. The only thing that I would retort with to what you said, I agree with you. I think you should be aggressive, and the Pac-12 will be aggressive, and I'm sure the wheels are turning behind the scenes today. The testing will not be in place, I believe, until the end of the month. So there might be some limitations on when you can fully begin practicing as an entire roster. But I think a pretty easy first step, if I'm Larry Scott today, I would be on the phone with the presidents and the chancellors saying, are we all in agreement that we can vote yes to bring back the season? And if that is a yes, I would send alerts down to athletic directors and coaches and say, all right, get your plans put together, because the Big Ten's testing will be in place on October 1st. That would be kind of my guess. If you give it, you know, 8-9 days, test it out, make sure it's all working, and then you're fully functional by the 1st of October. If that's the case, then you still have over 3 weeks to, you know, gear up and get your season underway. You should be able to get your team ready in 3 weeks. But just to start that ball, I'm sure it's happening behind the scenes. And with the testing in place, I think eventually we're going to get to the point in the next week when you get the approval from Oregon and California.
All right, so the big news today in college football, the Big Ten has approved. They are coming back October 23rd. They're going to have 8 straight weeks. They're going to play a 9th game. It's like a pseudo-conference championship week. The two best teams will play for the conference title. And then all the other teams, depending on where they rank in their division, will play each other for a 9th game. This gets them in a spot for the college football playoff potentially. And now you kind of just wait on the Pac-12. We'll have more on this with Stuart Mandel, national college football writer. He's going to hop on with us today at 1 o'clock. He's extremely busy, so we're pretty grateful he was able to hop on with us. What does he think about the Pac-12? So we'll get to that at 1. But coming up next, big night for the Denver Nuggets, a Game 7 that ended up being a blowout. In the final minutes, the Clippers look tense. We'll talk with Clippers superfan, former colleague Alex Crawford, and then Michael Spencer in Denver will join us to give us his thoughts on the Nuggets getting to the conference finals. That's next, but first, Rush with the sports update.
Is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Oh, man, oh, man. I've been waiting for this. How about this take? I really want the Lakers to make it to the Western Conference Finals to face the Clippers, but I just don't know if they have it in them.
Yeah, I don't know if they got enough talent on that roster.
What about this one? The Clippers are going to win the NBA Finals. See y'all in a couple months. Hashtag best team in Los Angeles.
Yeah, LA, Miami should be a pretty good series.
And finally, my favorite. I have no doubt the Clippers will win the NBA Finals. The vibe is palpable this season. Suck it, Gitnick, right? Alex Crawford, our former colleague and Clippers super fan. He's really the only Clipper fan I really know in my life.
He's the only one out there.
You know, I know we give you a hard time, Crawford, but there was an element of like, it does suck as a sports fan when your team blows a 3-1 lead. How you doing today? Are you doing okay there, bud?
Before we dive into this interview, I just want to know if you guys really want to talk hoops or if you just want to have a public flogging for me. And either one's cool. I'm cool with either one. I'll drop my pants right now. We can do the spanking live on air, or we can talk hoops. Either one's fine with me because I know I deserve it. Yeah. I was walking around with my junk in my hand and my middle fingers up, talking mess all season long, riding the wave, which you have to do.
No, you don't.
Team, you're a fan. Yes, you do.
Why?
Yes,
your team hadn't won anything. Your team hasn't even been to the conference finals, and you're grabbing your junk like they did anything? Why do you need to do that?
You have to live in the present moment, especially as a fan of a team with a curse like the Clippers. Like, I can't sit there and say, I'm going to get excited when we finally get over that hump and get to the Western Conference Finals. I'm going to get excited when we finally win something. Because we never have. And in the back of our mind this whole time, we knew this collapse was possible. We lived through it in 2015. Doc Rivers, they threw the graphic up last night, just jabbing the samurai sword into my belly. Only coach to ever blow 3-1 leads. It's just...
Three different decades, by the way.
Three different decades. And two of them in L.A. with a chance to get to the conference finals.
I remember I was working. I was in the room you guys were in. I was working in Portland 2015, and I remember game 6 against the Rockets. I threw my phone against the wall and broke it. My friend's like, what are you doing? There's still a game 7. I'm like, it's over. It's over. And then I thought, well, they fixed those problems. Because on paper, the Clippers checked every box they needed to check. So that's why I'm befuddled and at a loss today. And that's why I'm just like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know anything anymore because they checked every box as a fan. They could have checked this offseason, and they still found a way to do whatever the hell they do.
Now, I'll say this, Crawford. I love being cocky and confident. I know I can be that way as a fan sometimes. The only thing is if you're going to run your mouth, you got to be willing to accept the lashes when they come your way when your team loses. So props to you for calling in today. I do want to ask, though, from a basketball standpoint, like how panicked are you? Because this is the Clippers, and they traded everything. They don't have a first-round pick until, like, 2052. Like, it is a long time until they can draft another guy. And these guys can opt out. Kawhi and Paul George can opt out after next year. Where is the level of panic right now?
I blame Kawhi Leonard for this, and not the Kawhi Leonard that was on the court last night that didn't show up. That actually altered his legacy somewhat, probably not just to me, but to a lot of people. I thought, okay, it's game 7. This is where Kawhi shows up. He didn't. But I blame Kawhi because the reports say that when he came to the Clippers last summer, he told them, you got to go out and get Paul George. And so, of course, they did it. They have to do it. But is Paul George the guy that you want to mortgage your entire future for, which they did?
No.
For something like 7 draft picks, Danilo Gallinari, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Could you imagine this team they had this year, which would have remained intact, but you switch out Paul George for SGA and Danilo Gallinari? That's actually a better team. And I remember last summer when the Clippers made that trade to get Paul George, I was excited. I mean, of course, I was elated. We got Kawhi. It was somewhat of a coup in the basketball world. But I still was like, okay, I guess I got to get excited about Paul George. I got to sell myself on PG. And I purposely chose as a fan not to look at the cracks that have been showing in PG's resume. And now that we're here, I'm like, oh, man, we should not have listened to Kawhi. We should not have let Kawhi play GM. Our team would have been so much better if we just kept it intact and added Kawhi. But we did what we had to do to get him. And now I don't want to go as far as say we're screwed, but I just think it was the wrong choice.
I'm going to get you out of here on this one because we do want to go to Denver and get a reaction. And it's not even a question. Can you continue? Just stay loyal. Keep doing what you're doing. We're going to make jokes at your expense when you're being the cocky Clipper fan. But I love that you've stayed loyal this entire time. You've watched them blow 2-3-1 series leads and lose Western Conference final appearances. And yet here you are hopping on in Portland, still telling us how you're loyal to the brand. I love it. Can you never lose that?
I must be a sucker for punishment. Like, I must be into some kind of sports BDSM, the way that I continue take licking like a moth to the flame. But, Sprague, you know this. We're Oregon State football fans. It's almost like I don't know any better. Like, this is the path I have chosen, and I will continue down it. I mean, I'm not going to stray. You know me. I'm not going to stray from the path. So I won't lose any loyalty. I'm just I'm a little resigned today. I'm accepting.
Yeah.
But I'm tired, man. I'm tired.
Go get some rest. You always got next year, and maybe it's the last year for them to be relevant for the next decade. Thank you so much for hopping on, Crawford. We love you, and I'm sorry that happened to you last night.
I appreciate you guys, and I appreciate the Old Takes Exposed tweet, Dirt. That was masterful. That was great. Thanks, guys.
All right, there we go. Alex Crawford, our former colleague. He's the only Clippers super fan we know, so we had to hit him up for the ticker. Let's go to Denver now. Michael Spencer, the CBS affiliate over there in Denver. Big night for the Nuggs, man. Coming back from 3-1. Jokic being called the greatest passing big man of all time. Murray torching him for 40. And they just ended up beating him up in the fourth quarter. Michael, thanks for hopping on with us here in Portland, my man. What is the reaction in Denver, where I know traditionally the Nuggets don't power rank over the Broncos or maybe even the Avalanche, but what's the reaction been in Denver?
People are all in, man. They are absolutely loving it. And you're right. Typically, it would be a Broncos town. They started the season on Monday, and Tuesday, all anybody wanted to talk about was the Nuggets in Game 7. So I think that they're kind of shifting the pendulum, at least for now. They've grabbed our attention. And I think, you know, with the way they're playing right now, they're certainly deserving of our attention here in Denver. And guys, they just keep doing it, man. And I've counted them out when they were down 3-1 against the Jazz, and they just continue to prove everybody wrong. And they're feeding off of that heading into this Western Conference Finals with LA. They know that everybody on the national scale picked the Clippers. They know that nobody's giving them a chance against the Lakers, and they love that. They're embracing that, and I think that's part of the reason why they've been so successful.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch that celebration in the locker room last night. What does it say, though, like not just to come back from down 3-1 against a team like the Clippers, who was the prohibitive favorite to win the NBA Finals, but to do it in the midst of going through like a PR and locker room nightmare with one of your young players calling out the coach and star players as you go down 3-1? Like, what did that tell you about this team and their resiliency to overcome comments like that, come back together as a group, and win 3 straight games?
It's a little bit of guts, and it's a little bit of we don't care, right? Like, I look at it from Jamal Murray and Paul Millsap. Those are two guys that are just going to gut it out, and they're like, okay, whatever. Michael Porter Jr. said what he said. We're not going to let that distract us. It was interesting, and I think a smart move by the Nuggets. They canceled practice the day after Michael Porter Jr. made those comments. It's one of the few times that they've canceled practice during the postseason. And I thought it was a smart move, so nobody talks to the media the next day. And in fact, Michael Porter Jr. was one of the last people to speak to the media that night. So it wasn't until after, I think, what would have been Game 5 that we had a chance to talk to the players. And after that, it was all washed away, right? So I thought that was a brilliant PR move on their part to not dwell on that and to change the narrative, because all of a sudden the narrative became, wait a minute, can you guys come back from 3-1 yet again? So honestly, I don't think Michael Porter Jr.'s what he said really lingered that long. They had a team meeting that got over it. And then I think there's the Nikola Jokic side of it, right, where he's just like, whatever, man, I'm just going to go play basketball. And I think they feed off of that as well. And so I think it's two sides to that coin. I think that's part of the reason why they were able to put that behind them and move on.
Yeah. Michael Spencer is our guest here from Denver. The Nuggets going to the Western Conference Finals. They complete the comeback last night. And, you know, Michael's on Twitter, by the way, at MichaelCBS4. You could feel, I could feel it through the television that no Clipper wanted anything to do with a shot in the last like 9 minutes of that game. And the Nuggets were just playing free and loose. I want to ask you, though, about, you know, a guy getting a lot of attention today and Nikola Jokic. A lot of people may have thought he was going to be a really good basketball player. Did we ever envision him kind of becoming the star of the NBA for a few days and doing what he has done thus far and kind of bringing the big man back to the game in a game of 3-and-D? You've got a big man out there who doesn't physically look the part necessarily, and he's torching teams. Did you ever think we'd get this kind of play when they got Jokic?
No, I don't think the Nuggets said they would get this type of play when they got Jokic, and that's why they took him in the 41st pick overall. And you go back to that draft, it was just on the ticker, right? Like, it wasn't even an announcement. There was actually a Taco Bell commercial going on at the time when Nikola Jokic got drafted, and it just flipped up on the bottom line that the Nuggets had taken this center from Serbia that nobody'd ever heard of. And now all of a sudden he's killing it, and I think last night was his fifth postseason triple-double. I mean, he's on his way to a really, really fantastic career, guys, and second-team All-NBA today. So, no, the Nuggets didn't know what they had in Jokic until the last couple of years. Those of us here in Denver have kind of been seeing this and seeing his growth and seeing his development and seeing how he sees the floor and what he can turn into, and now it's happening on a national stage, and it's not a fluke.
Yeah. The second best thing to come out of last night outside of the Clipper tears was the middle school photo that was floating around of Jokic on Twitter. I mean, he's a large kid, man, and he's living out his dream in the NBA. Now, you mentioned everybody's counting him out, and we all did it, down 3-1, both of these series. I remember doing a segment down 3-1 to Utah, asking, what the hell happened to Denver, man? I thought this was their year. Joke's on me, now they're in the conference finals. How do you look at everybody's going to do it against the Lakers. Again, we know we're all going to fall into the trap. Just from a matchup standpoint, how do you think it shakes out? How do they pair up with LA?
You know, I think if they get depth play, I think they're going to have a really good shot, and I think they're going to be competitive. And that's kind of what you saw last night, right, when they were making that run. Jeremy Grant hit a couple big threes. Gary Harris hit one. Paul Millsap hit one. That is what the Nuggets need if they're going to beat the Lakers. Look, AD and LeBron are really good players. The Nuggets feel like they've got Jokic and they've got Murray, so you've got the two guys there. Maybe you give the edge to the Lakers when it comes to the two big stars, but if the Nuggets can get depth play out of whether it be Michael Porter Jr., Jeremy Grant, Torrey Craig, Paul Millsap, they're going to have a good shot at giving this Laker team a run for their money. I think that they can. Open some eyes if they're still close.
Yeah. There we go. Great stuff from one of our favorites in Denver, Michael Spencer, the CBS affiliate over there and on Twitter at MichaelCBS4. Michael, you know we always appreciate the time. Congratulations to you and the city. It's pretty cool to have a team in the West Finals. And good luck against the Lakers. We're looking forward to that matchup.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, there we go. Our daily ticker today is Alex Crawford and Michael Spencer, Clipper fan extraordinaire, just, you know, blaming everybody and not just maybe saying.
Well, that's what the team's doing, too.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't have any chemistry.
I want to talk
need more
about
time
that.
Together. And
we'll get into college football at one. Stuart Mandel's going to join us. Let's wrap up the NBA stuff. Maybe we'll dive back in the final hour, but let's wrap that up. What the Clippers were saying after last night's game, the conference finals, we had game one with Miami and Boston, which went down to the wire in overtime. So we'll talk some more hoops coming up next. Stuart Mandel at the top of the hour, national college football writer, with his thoughts on where the Pac-12 stands. That's next on radio.com and 1080 The Fan.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, Stuart Mandel, national college football writer, is going to join us at 1. Does he think the Pac-12 is going to get everything in motion and try to join with the Big 10, the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12? But let's wrap up what we saw in the NBA last night. You know, excuses are a hell of a thing. And sometimes excuses are valid. Other times they're just excuses that are a way out and a cop-out. Paul George was quoted at the beginning of the year saying, this is absolutely a title year for us, brought together to win. He then followed up last night being an abysmal, 4 of 14 or whatever the hell it was from the field, with 10 points. saying, there's no pressure on a title this year. It's all about building into next year, which, by the way, next year is probably his last year with his current contract.
Yeah.
Did you see the report by Mark Spears? They weren't in shape. They couldn't run for longer than 3 minutes. They're citing chemistry problems. And I'm sitting here going, guys, really? That's your cop-out? That you didn't have enough chemistry? That you weren't in shape? Shut up. There's nothing to add to an already unlikable group than adding excuses to why you looked so garbage in the fourth quarter and largely the second half.
They need to take a page out of superfan Alex Crawford's book, and that is when you run your mouth and you talk your ish, you get to the end of the year and you don't win, you face the music. And the Clippers did not do that last night. And to not only punk out on the floor the way that they did and no show and score like until 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, they had like 8 points until they hit a couple of garbage time threes. They had eight. It was 18-8 with like a minute left in the game. It was blowing my mind. They could not make a shot. You come out after the game and you say, this was a failure. We didn't even make it to the conference finals. A roster this good. We have Kawhi Leonard, who won the finals MVP last year. Paul George came in. We built this thing to win NBA championships and multiple. And so to bounce out in the second round's a failure. And if I'm Paul George, I'm saying, man, I played terrible tonight. I need to be better than that. Same thing goes for Kawhi Leonard. Don't sell Paul George short, by the way. He was 4 of 16.
Oh, 16. That's right.
2 of 11 from 3 with 10 points, while Kawhi Leonard was 6 of 22, 2 of 7 with 14 points. They were both god-awful last night in the biggest game of the series. And I think some looming things reared their ugly head. They thought that they would win on paper. That's not the way it works in sports. And they've had this chemistry stuff looming all year. Like, just to be fair, at least to that, that was written about in January when a lot of the role players on the Clippers were like, dude, this is ridiculous. We're going out there playing our asses off every night, and Kawhi and Paul George are in and out of the lineup
taking
whenever they want.
Off. Yep.
Not showing up, not practicing, not playing. Like, this is, why am I working my butt off to get a top three seed when these guys only got to play 45 games? That was an elephant in the room in that locker room all season long, and it reared its ugly head again last night.
Playoff P. His supposed nickname is now 1-9 in elimination games.
That's not good.
People calling him Pandemic P now, yeah. So that's not great. The side three-point shot, I still can't believe.
He hit the backboard. He hit the backboard.
Playoff P your pants, am I right?
Why didn't you tweet that last night?
That's a great day.
Just hit me right now.
You know what he also said, by the way? Remember when they disappointed and lost to Utah in the first round a couple of years back and when he was in OKC?
Yeah.
His post-game comments after losing that series was, we're not championship or bust. Give the chemistry time. We're going to be there 1 year later. He demanded a trade.
Yes, yes, he did. And they have 1 year left. They've sold their entire future to put this team together. I don't even know how you begin to try to rebuild this if both those players leave. I want to draw attention real quick to two positive things here. We can dive back into the Clippers. What I've loved the most, first of all, if you're not watching playoff basketball, if you're complaining about it, just tell me outright you don't care and don't like basketball. I don't need to know those thoughts, all right? If you're not watching, that's okay. But it has been really good basketball.
It has.
What we saw yesterday is an example of the sport that I love so much, and it doesn't always happen. Team basketball matters, right? Like, sometimes you can have a LeBron or a Duncan or a Jordan or a Bird or a Magic, and they can transcend and lift franchises higher than they probably should. But largely, what still matters is team basketball. And you saw two teams on display yesterday that showed that. Not that Boston's not good team basketball, but Miami and Denver, resilient, tough groups who trust each other, believe in each other, buy in, and don't care about the noise. They just go play. I loved that was on full display yesterday for the NBA. The second thing, as much as we make fun of Paul George and Pat Beverly, and rightfully so, they're loudmouths who have accomplished almost nothing to the top tier, and yet they act like they're these multi-champions. Kawhi Leonard? I mean,
yeah, that was LeBron. He's getting crucified today.
He's largely getting a huge pass today. Yeah. And he scored, what, 2-3 points in the second half?
Yeah, he was 6-22 on the night. I know
6-22. He scored 3 points in the second half of that game.
He was a minus 21.
And the thing about Kawhi, he's still a great player. He's still one of the top. There's no doubt about that. The funny thing to me is the way we've rewritten his career. Like, we act like, and I already heard this on a podcast, that he lifted and carried the San Antonio Spurs when they won in 14. He was good. He was great.
He was great in that series, but...
But the Spurs won for 20 straight years.
Yes, they did.
He then goes to Toronto, and yes, they won the championship. It was magical. It was awesome. Let's not act like most of us didn't see that roster go, well, they're one piece away from doing it. He got a great bounce, and he also had some injury luck in the NBA Finals. Yeah. And suddenly we put him on this platform and we go, oh, he's the best player in the NBA. It's not close.
Right. The Raptors were a couple of plays away from going back to the conference finals this year without him.
So if we're going to hold these different superstars, Steph has gotten this, LeBron has gotten this, Harden gets this now. If you're going to hold these superstars to a standard, how about we don't just make fun of Pat Bev and Paul George? How about we hold Kawhi Leonard, who just as Al Crawford noted, gutted the entire future of this franchise because he demanded to play with Paul George. A lot of this is on him, too.
Yeah, I'm
hard to have a leader, Dirt, that doesn't talk and doesn't really show much emotion. He can still win another couple championships in his career, but I'm with some people out there. I don't think that... I don't like that. I think your leader needs to be vocal, needs to set the tone, and I think there are moments where he just doesn't.
Not to mention the fact that he taps out 20 nights a year.
Yeah.
Like that would loom that for me if I'm in that too. Locker room. I, you know, load managing, whatever. Somebody had a great tweet saying they can load manage all the way to next year now. last year in Toronto, Kyle Lowry is the heart and soul of that team. And he was the guy who had been there for a number of years. He's a leader in that locker room. And it showed again this year. The playoff run that Toronto went on, the year that they had, he was the heartbeat. Kawhi Leonard was the player that was able to put them over the top. But they had a great infrastructure and chemistry in place. You can't create one out of thin air, especially when your leader is doing that. He's a tremendous player. He's one of the best players in the league. There's no doubting that. I do find it funny the way we handle and treat certain guys with narratives, because if LeBron has a game like that in a game seven where they get laughed out of the gym and he goes 6-22 and he no-shows, that's 24/7 sports talk is how bad LeBron is and how he choked again.
He did in 2011.
Right. It was all it was. LeBron sucks, and that's a three-time NBA champion. And Kawhi Leonard, it seems like, is getting a pass and we're all making fun of Paul George. I do also want to get back quickly to something you mentioned, and I think it's important to do. As fun as it is to make fun of the Clippers and how dangerous this might be and their future might be really scary if they don't win next year, I want to make sure to give equal credit to Denver for coming back in this series down 16 or 19, whatever it was in game 5 and game 6. Jokic was far and away the best player on the floor last night. That was remarkable.
We need to talk about him today.
Dude, it's crazy. Jamal Murray went off in the biggest game of his career in a game 7, a guy that had a really bad game 7 last year against Portland in the same spot to get back to this point. They play good team basketball, and it's a roster that was built the right way. They drafted, they signed guys, they took risks that have worked, and guys like Michael Porter Jr., they've developed guys. They built the roster the right way, and I'm glad that they're having success.
Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, Miami up 1-0. Let's go back to football. The Big Ten announced that they are going to play starting October 23rd. We just got a big note from the governor of California on what the Pac-12 can or cannot do. And we'll kick it off with Stuart Mandel, national college football writer. He joins us next. Does he think the Pac-12 is going to play as well? Hour 2 straight ahead, Dirt and Sprague on radio.com and 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.